Get ready to expand your horizons and discover great reads. This is Bookbound, a library podcast. Welcome back to Bookbound. I'm Jessica. I'm joined at the mic, as ever, by Maricela Garza and Cheryl Lindemann. But we also have a special guest. We have Mecca from the Lansing Library.
Hi.
So hello, everybody.
Hello. Welcome,
Mecca.
Hi. I'm so happy to have you.
Yeah, we are definitely happy to have you. We have a number of things we want to talk about. We are kind of all over the place in our titles, but we are going to start with Mecca. And she's here talking about something dear to me. We want to talk about romance.
We do.
We do.
I'm a lover girl. I love romance so much. I love the fact that there's always a happy ending.
Absolutely.
There needs to be a happy ending all the time.
Everything going on in the world.
Yes, absolutely. I think that
can be a plus.
Assured happy ending is what everybody needs. So, yeah.
But there's a big... There's so many subgenres. There's so many types of books out there.
Truly.
What's something that... What draws you?
Yes. So... I just love books that are grounded in realism.
Mm-hmm.
I love books that show the characters in just like a grounded way, grounded light. Like the issues that they go through are very real and honest.
Mm-hmm.
The way they navigate those issues are very real and honest. And the way they get to that happy ending is very real and honest.
Okay.
And, can I start talking about the authors
now? Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Specifically, Tia Williams, Kennedy Ryan. Love those two so much. So much. Kennedy Ryan, listen, the way that lady writes is so incredible. The way she incorporates, like, real life issues. I'm trying to think of a book that I can talk about by her. I'll just talk about... So, Before I Let Go, that's one of her books. I think it's in the Skyland series.
Yes,
it's the first one in that series.
Yep.
And the main character, well, one of them, she suffers a trigger warning, like miscarriage. And her and her husband, she divorces him. And the whole time is just them navigating that tragedy. Like, it's a tragedy that they're both facing. And
a trauma that's holding on to both of them.
Yeah, and a trauma that's holding on to both of them. And I love how, you know, they're both navigating that. They're both in therapy. The husband is neglectful of going and not really acknowledging what she's going through. And it's just a lovely book. I'm trying to talk about it in a way that's not going to spoil it.
Yes.
But It's definitely worth a read. It's worth checking out. And Tia, Miss Williams, she can write as well, just incredibly well. But she is funny. The way she writes, she incorporates comedy in her writing.
Yep.
And I never noticed it before. Like, I would whenever I would read, like, some of her books. I saw this post on Instagram. I follow, like, book accounts or whatever.
Absolutely.
And they were saying how, like underneath, like, the pain or whatever, she'll always, like, insert, like, a quip or, like, a mm-hmm. joke to, like, bring you back to, like, you know, just, like, a happy place. And I really love her for that. And a couple of... like new authors I'm trying to get into. Well, not new, but I'm trying to like expand.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who I'm reading. What about you, Jessica?
So I read a really broad range, but I also am a fantasy sci-fi person too.
Yes.
So one example I was telling you about is that this next week, I really, really love Nalani Singh.
Yes.
Who is a Southeast Asian diaspora New Zealander.
Yes.
So a lot of it is a world, more of a worldview than, you know, it's not an American central view, which I really like about her books. But she writes a range. She writes contemporary romance. She writes fantasy romance, paranormal romance, and sort of in suspense as well. So the series that the book that's coming out next week is called Archangel's Eternity. And this is a paranormal romance series. So this is for the people, the girls who like dragon's wings, whatever.
Yes.
This is a series that focuses on archangels and angels. It's angels, archangels, humans, slightly enhanced humans, not science-wise, but, it's just humans with a little bit extra.
Yes.
But this is a series I've been reading. This is the 18th book. It's the last book of the series.
Yeah.
And what I've been sort of really reflecting on, and it sort of really was brought up by the way the last book was written, but it's that what keeps you following a series or following an author even.
Yeah.
And one of the things about her is I like the depths of her characters. I love, there's a level of humor that is always part of her books, but ultimately, you've got people who with deep, deep trauma that they're dealing with. Not every character, but different characters with some of my favorite characters. It's how they found their way out of things that had otherwise really calcified them, really got stuck them. But it's ultimately those are the romances that just you see the growth in both people and everybody around them, and the network of found family that is part of these stories. So. So I would highly recommend Nalani Singh.
How long have you been reading her?
I think, I'm not entirely sure how I started reading her. Mm-hmm. I started with a different series. And then this one, I can't remember which came first, but I read a first book and then read everything that up to that
followed,
point. And then I've just been sort of, she's put out one or two a year, one in each series, and then other things on top of that for the last, I don't know now.
It's
series
been a long time.
It's 18 books.
Yeah.
So, and the other one is even longer. And she's got, she has this, a series of, it's sort of around a family that has a sort of a rugby base. Some of the guys play rugby.
Yeah.
And women play. And again, it's sort of, it's almost everything kind of gets mixed into it. There's disability rep, it's multi-ethnic, it's always multi-ethnic,
Nice, we love that.
Exactly. I think that's what attracted me, is it's all the things that she was including. There's LGBTQIA rep, she does, and her characters. I think what draws me to a lot of romance authors is the way they do their characters.
Yeah.
I'd also say, kind of, in a sense of Tia Williams and her humor, I really love somebody like Talia Hibbert or, there's somebody I'm blanking on too. But Talia, she writes from a Black British experience.
Oh, fun.
But she also always, almost always writes in a level of disability representation too. In a range of ways, but mental health and just neurodiversity and, things that are very relevant to the world.
Yes.
But hers are not all, but there's a lot of humor in particularly her kind of bigger breakthrough books.
Yeah.
The Brown Sisters series, Get a Life, Chloe Brown is the first. Yes, she's making a really neat face at me. Yeah.
I've been meaning to read her books.
Those three are my favorites.
They're really good.
I love other things by her too, but those three are my favorite. I love those sisters.
Okay.
That family is off the wall.
Yes.
Fabulous.
Oh, snap. And I got to add them to my reading list.
Yep.
Yes.
So are the other ones for you?
You know what? Yes. I did talk to you guys about 24 Seconds From Now. Youth.
So you've read why, gotten into some of the why. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. I love that book because it's a youth book. It's a youth novel. And it's centered on young romance. Mm-hmm.
This is Jason Reynolds, right?
Yeah, that's it. Yes. And it's through the perspective of a young man, like a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it's a little uncomfortable to talk about, but so this young boy and like his girlfriend, they're seniors in high school, and they are navigating their first
experiences.
And bump the mic, sorry. And of course there's nerves, and like it's just it's so just young, love, cute about it. And I do think those stories are important because young love is a thing, you know, your first love and all of that. Some people, you know, that's find that very important, you know. And I love how that book talks about it in a very loving way, a very nurturing way.
Right.
And the subject is taken seriously.
Right. Yeah.
That's what I like the most.
Right.
So, yeah, I need to get more into my YA reads as well. Do you have any, Jessica?
Not so much. I actually have been fairly adult focused in terms of romance for a very long time. And I've talked to my coworkers here, they have to share a room with me.
Yes.
There was a point where this year I kind of looked at my reading history and you have to understand, when I started at this job, pretty much all I read was romance.
Oh.
And I got in March before I looked at what I had read this year, and like I literally read one, and I thought, this is not fair. I want to read.
Yes.
I want time to read.
Yes.
More romance. So
So
it's been an interesting, and there's a couple I will talk about later in the podcast series, because there's a few that I actually have been able to read that are just coming out later. But
send them.
I will tell you all about them later, and I will tell you. Yes.
Yay.
Cool. Yep. Very cool.
Okay. So what else we got
to talk
about?
So I've got the next section of our podcast, and
You
know, we have our to-be-reads.
Yes.
Stacks and stacks of books.
So many.
I also have a to-be-reads, like, in my head, like, just things, like, you come across, and you're like, I should really read that.
Yeah.
The Bell Jar. By Sylvia Plath. I actually read bits of it, but mostly I listened to it by Maggie Gyllenhaal. And the reason I read it finally, because I had never read it before, was because the book I really want to talk about is Love, Sivvy, a novel inspired by the life, letters, and diaries of young Sylvia Plath by R.L. Tolson. When I saw that book coming out, I was like, okay, this is the time. We're finally going to read the original, The Bell Jar, which I did, and gosh, it was amazing. But this novel by Tolson is a fictionalized biography. It's a novel in verse, and it really just offers a very jarring portrait of Sylvia as a teenager. And then, you know, it does spend some time, quite a bit of time, into her university years at Smith College. But what really struck me is that this book was set in her lifetime, in 1948 to 1955. And it was so relatable in the way she described her life as a teen. Like, wow. Graduations, having what I think she called advanced seminar, what do they call it? The kids call it now when you're in those
honors class, kind
accelerated classes where you
AP?
Can call it AP classes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, just all these things that were just so similar to the American high school experience of today. But this was it was a picture of the intensity that Sylvia felt about her life, about the approach that she took to her writing, which was very, very passionate, but also just how much pressure she felt, you know, personally, just her feeling very personally boxed in or caged into what was expected of women at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought that Tolson did a really, really great job of just giving you a very quick overview. It really doesn't go into her adult life, but I guess she does graduate at the end of the book, but it was really a neat read. And one of the things that really caught me at the beginning was a quote by Sylvia. It says, "I am a genius of a writer. I have it in me. I am writing the best poems of my life. They will make my name." Sylvia Plath, 1962. And that was in some ways very opposite to how she felt. She had so much self-doubt, as many people do.
Mm-hmm.
but just like this wavering back and forth, and then her very like self-awareness of mental illness, and like, you know, the way she was described in Tolson's book is like, you know, she described these scenes of having this dark ocean that she's about to step into, like almost like she knew she was going to have this dark period or moody swings. Mm-hmm. And it was neat, very neat. So this book in some ways really paralleled a lot of what was in The Bell Jar, the storyline. And it's because Tolson, R.L. Tolson, and by her own account, says that she's been obsessed with Sylvia Plath since she was 13 and read her first Plath poem. I've not read too much of Sylvia's poetry, but I would love to get into some of that. It was just an amazing, amazing read, and I enjoyed thinking about that intensity that one must feel if you know that you have this major passion, but something or someone or some set of, you know, prescribed must-dos for your life are impeding you. So yeah, that was really cool. I also picked up The Poet and the Bees, A Story of the Seasons of Sylvia Plath, Kept Bees. And this is actually a picture book that was written by Amy Novsky and illustrated by Jessica Love. I thought the poems were by Sylvia Plath, but they're not. It was actually written by Amy Novsky. But a beautifully illustrated book this last period of her life. She was a beekeeper, but just really, really beautiful. I won't get too much more into it, but I would highly recommend that book as well.
Excuse me, I didn't have a voice. I wanted to check that out. That looks really interesting. So I also have a fascination and interest in Sylvia Plath, especially when I read her last year for the first time.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it was a podcast that turned me on to the sort of the real story. And I have two books I want to talk about, and they both sort of deal with one is just a brief mention of Red Comet, which is a very, very, very large biography of Sylvia Plath by Heather Clark. It was a 2021 Pulitzer Prize finalist, but it is over 1,000 pages. So I'm listening to it on Libby.
Wow.
And I'm listening to it in chunks because the story is it's like almost from birth until her suicide. And it's very, very similar to Love, Sylvia, and that touches on those societal themes, on the context of her life, mm-hmm. Of the 1950s, of a very bright woman in the 1950s, of the pressures of having a mother who's a single mother raising mm-hmm. you, who's very nurturing but almost overbearing. I mean, there were so many things mm-hmm. at play. I was thinking about Mecca, the book by Jason Reynolds, about how sexuality was handled in that.
Yeah.
At the time when Sylvia Plath was writing, you know, men could talk about their sexual exploits, but women were supposed to stay
quiet,
virgins till marriage.
Yes.
Yeah, and all that pressure, and how she would call that out, but like nobody was calling it out, right? It was like she always felt like, what is going on in so many levels of her life? So Red Comet touches on that. I'm a quarter of the way through now, and it is so good.
Oh,
it's similar themes.
Yeah.
So,
congrats.
Yeah, I know. It's like, if
that's
I can get through
deal.
This,
yeah.
it is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So at the end, I'd like to talk about it a little bit, because in particular, there is a lot of discussion about why she did what she did, mm-hmm. and a link to electroshock therapy.
Yes.
And that she was so afraid, and I'm ruining the book, but in a way, is so afraid of having electroshock therapy again.
Right.
Because that's what happened the first time at McLean. And that electroshock therapy, I have since learned that I had a distant relative that got that, and they were never the same after. I mean, the electroshock therapy was often done poorly. It hurt so bad. It was extremely painful. And there's surmising that Sylvia Plath did not want to go through that again. That's what she thought was going to happen to her.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a piece that we don't hear. We hear about these mad women, right? And that's what they're known for. I like that these
and
are
just
pulling out a different story.
There's just so much like very subtle, but maybe very overt. Like, you know, you can't be too much.
Too much
is what she talks about in this, you know, fictionalized novel, is like this feeling that you just can't be you can't stand out too much, you know?
No.
And, you know, who's to say, you know, what is too much and, you know, who can be too much or,
I don't know.
But I just am really appreciative that there's so much, like her diaries, her her journals, all these things that writers can go back to learn more about how she thought and, you know, what led, you know, to her, her life path.
Mm-hmm. I think this is going to be a recurring theme because I think you want to bring that back. There's a story that's coming out this summer that I want to talk about that also has a tie to Sylvia Plath. And, but, and actually even one I want to talk about that in the fall that fits the same time period and some of the same themes. So kind of be aware that some of this is going to come back around again.
Right. So the next book that's sort of related in a different way, I'm going to talk about Nothing Compares to You, What Sinead O'Connor Means to Us. And this is edited by Sonia Huber and Martha Bain with foreword by Nico Case. And this is a multi-author essay collection. We have wonderful authors in this. I mean, I won't name them all, but Porochiska Kakpur, Leah Lakshmi Pipsna Samarshmina, Lydia Yuknovich, just absolutely every essay was really, really phenomenal. I waffled about talking about this one because there's an actual physical trigger warning written in right in the beginning of the book, just so you know, so it's going to be there. But there are a lot of trigger warnings in this book for sexual assault, abuse, a lot of difficult topics. It was one of those books where I put it down and I was like, okay, I need a break. You know, it was a lot at once. Mm-hmm. But what this is an essay collection where after Sinead O'Connor's death, Sonia Huber put out a call for essays where people would talk about one of the songs and craft the essay around the song. And then they're pulling in it's all women or non-binary authors, and they're pulling in their own stories and in such a unique way. And each essay is a different song, and it's their favorite song and why. And so I won't get into each essay, obviously, but you kind of have to experience it. It's a bit niche. If you don't love Sinead O'Connor, if you aren't into this, you may not want to pick this up at all. But just in case you do, I would recommend it. Again, it was a bit heavy. It really made me think about my favorite Sinead O'Connor songs. And the takeaway, I think, was that she was a truth teller. Right. She waffled. She made people mad. She made people mad all the time on different sides of issues, from the Pope to Miley Cyrus. She put her foot in her mouth. She flip-flopped. She looked unpopular. She changed her religion. She changed her identities over and over again. She
so
looked
human.
Yeah, she was so human.
So human.
She was open about being unstable. And she was really shaken by the suicide of her son. But she didn't die of suicide. She died of basically COPD, kind of like asthma with an illness. So again, What did we do to her too, in a way, is what this book kind of reckons with. There's a really great Instagram post, and there's a good New Yorker article from Hanif Abdurraqib, who I talk about a lot on the podcast we've talked about, but about people in that position and what we do to them. When we kind of, as a collective, as a culture, not maybe all of us at the table here, but we sort of love it. It's like, look what they're doing now. Look how crazy. Look what they're doing now. And what we do to people in position, especially people with mental illness, who maybe do flip and change and perhaps do look like their positions are unstable. But she was a truth teller. She talked about abuses in the Catholic Church before other people did. And she paid for it. But she was right.
How
was not wrong.
She wasn't. And what I can touch into, she was my favorite, probably my favorite musician if I go back to high school. I had cutouts of her picture on my folder. I brought it to class. I screamed those lyrics in the car. The Lion and the Cobra is my favorite album. My favorite song is Just As You Said It Would Be, I'm just going to say, and Mandinka.
Are any of your favorite songs?
Yes, they are. Oh, okay, both in here. And she was singing about things that I didn't understand, but I needed. And she was singing with this anger that women weren't supposed to really have. And this passion about topics that it just, I don't know, it just, I mean, yeah, there's punk and that sort of thing, but it was just different. It was so visceral, and it came from her life, you know, and it, I think it gave, and this essay, as I can tell, gave voice to a lot of things that people didn't even know what the voice was for. You know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And it just really spoke. So mm-hmm. it meant a lot to me. She meant a lot to me. This book did, just to read that I wasn't alone in that. And if you are interested a little bit in her, she lived in a very small town in Ireland at the end of her life, and she had a huge Dublin funeral, but the small town did a huge funeral for her too. And, big procession. And just how much she touched that community. She was intimately involved in that community. And the way she was treated by us was also the way she was treated by Ireland. And they, in a way, I think that they've had to reckon with they treated her, but also that they needed her, and she gave voice to their trauma.
Yeah. Right.
Because Ireland's filled with trauma. Yes. So yes. I don't want to keep going because I could talk too long about this book, and I won't anymore. But if you have any interest in the topic, I'd check it out.
Okay. Well, I've got the next book. And that is The Beginning Comes After the End by Rebecca Solnit. This is one, yes, Cheryl's just waving her hand. This is a book I think I needed right now. In it, Rebecca starts with the October 2024 land back ceremony. Is north of San Francisco. The Western Rivers Conservancy handed back 466 acres to the Federated Indians of Gratton Rancheria. And she ties that together with the opening of dams in Washington and certain lands being given back to tribes there for their stewardship. And it ultimately looks at the changes that have occurred in civil rights, women's rights, LGBTQ activism, environmentalism, since the 1960s forward, mm-hmm. and pulls back. You know, she looks at the individual progress that we've made, and wants people to really kind of step back and see the current backlash, which is not cool, not comfortable, not, mm-hmm. you know, it's very hard to be working through right this point, but it's there for a reason. We have been steadily making progress. It doesn't feel like it all the time. It feels like we're backsliding right now, mm-hmm. but the backlash is happening for a reason, because we are making progress, and those ideas are out there and very real and, you know, growing and expanding kind of no matter what's happening in terms of bringing the hammer down on all of these, you know, whether it's DEI or but it is one of those things that you sort of need to be reminded sometimes, especially.
You gotta go backwards,
just
go
reminded
forward.
That there's hope. Yeah. This is, Build is a sequel to Hope in the Dark, but it is, it's just, it's, which I have read, but you didn't have to read that in any way whatsoever to get, this isn't long, but it's just, it really does kind of identify how far we really have come in a short period of time in the grand scheme of things. So she just wants, again, it's kind of to go back to the other, it is a really nice message of hope and a reminder that things kind of have to fall apart for change to happen, but we have made change happen. The ideas are there. The ideas are spreading. The fact that we, you know, there is a good, recognizable chunk of people who understand that there's a better understanding of gender. There's a better mm-hmm. understanding of environmental thinking. That the idea that there wasn't a whole indigenous system prior to colonialism.
Yeah.
It's, you kind of go back to that whole idea of this wasn't an empty land before, you know, Europeans arrived.
This was a thriving society. Yes.
That treated the land in a way different than
Absolutely.
What these colonialists,
truly
colonizers,
connected with it.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it was a whole thought system there that can be very helpful and might be very good for
What's
us
the
to
name
use.
Of this book again?
This is The Beginning Comes After the End by Rebecca Solnit.
The Beginning
so
Comes
I just,
After
it's,
the
it's
End.
Just, and it is not long, it's a really good, nice, hopeful read. I listened to it. She reads the audiobook. She's somebody, she's somebody you can find quite easily. And then she has a number of books that are also, none of them are really long, but they're it's essays and just really.
I was just going to say, I was talking about To Be Read in My Thoughts, you know, these books. That yes. I can, one yes. of them is by Rebecca Solnit, but I can't think of the title. I think it was about women. It was,
Oh, Men Explain Things to Me.
Men Explain Things to Me.
She's sort of credited with the whole mansplaining.
Mansplaining.
Concept
of
mansplaining.
Oh, she coined that.
And Men Explain Things to Me is that first. Because, it's that experience of being an expert in a thing and having somebody literally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Explain.
Yeah, I broke the mic. I had to apologize to
you. You're okay.
Too,
you are absolutely okay.
The relationship with the mic is a thing in the podcast.
It's all good.
It's a good thing.
It is all good.
It is one of those, And Rebecca Solnit is just, she's a good, she just puts things out there in such a way that is so helpful. But she's also introduced me to different concepts that started me along. She's very into conservancy, and that's something that's become very important to me. So it's just a lot going on, and Indigenous rights.
One of my favorite books is her memoir, Recollections of My Non-Existence. Mm-hmm. Oh, so good. And she's a truth teller, but she's also weaving in, she's like an architect of hope for everyone.
Absolutely.
And I feel like that's,
Yes.
I mean, she's like, okay, but there is this.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
She definitely sounds like someone I should definitely start reading. Yeah. Yeah. She sounds great.
Yeah.
And her books and her articles, too. I mean, they're always like, she seems to be able to cut to the heart of it and not be afraid to say things, too.
She's very direct, straight to the point in her writing style.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely. Oh, I love that.
Yeah. It's really neat.
Yep.
So another book I wanted to read, and this one's wonderful, and it's me again, and this is, then I'm just going to quickly go through this one as much as I can. It's called London Falling, A Mysterious Death in a Gilded City and a Family's Search for Truth by Patrick Radden Keefe, and Patrick Radden Keefe's books are totally on my reading list. This is not an indie book at all. This is one of the books you'll see a lot around this year. Just came out this month. I was so excited about it because I read the New Yorker story first before the book came out, and I was waiting. I think it might have mentioned that the book was coming, and it was one of those really long ones where I stayed up really late reading it, and I was like, whoa, what even is this? And basically it is, I guess you consider it a work of true crime. And it's about a young man who's 19 years old. This is in 2019. And he's disappeared from his family, and they can't find him. His name is Zach Brettler. And a couple days later, they find out that he jumped off of a large, very fancy apartment building in London, into the Thames. Wow, not New York. And so what this is a book trying to, it does many things. It's trying to look at what happened. Can you solve the crime? Who was there a crime? Was it a suicide or was this a murder? But it's also a story about London and this sort of underworld of, white collar crime, of corruption, of the influence of oligarchs from several countries, and this sort of really seedy, dark underworld where, people put up money for these big ventures, they fall, and then there's no way of getting the money back because there never was an account. And now the person's in the Dominican Republic, and now they're literally in Wyoming, and now you can't ever get the money out of these people. And there are a lot of different stories. So when the parents found out about this, they're heartbroken. It's also their story too. It's a story about parental love. It's a story about how much parents can really do to protect their children, especially in this age where we have these intense, heavy algorithms where kids fall into different things.
Yes.
But backing up a little bit, when they found out about what happened, they realized that their son was pretending to be somebody else. He was known as Zach Ismailov, and he was known as the son of a Russian oligarch who had over $200 million and was making all these really big investments in London. This young man was, with his family money. And that is not at all what was going on. So he had constructed this whole identity. He'd gone to this private school with a lot of Russian oligarch family members. And so he had gotten this idea. He was obsessed with extreme wealth. His parents, they're fairly wealthy, honestly, but he wanted extreme wealth. He was fascinated by Putin. He was fascinated by power. And the parents weren't like this. They had two sons. The older son was a better student, got into a better private school, was kind of on sort of a normal life path, whatever normal is. But you know what I'm saying? Not like this. Why? Why did their son want this? They kind of tried to intervene at different times, but they didn't know it was as bad as it was. Well, what happened is he'd gotten involved with some really, really dangerous and powerful people. And it looks, for all intents and purposes, like he was trying to save his life with that jump. And you have to read the book to figure out, I don't want to spoil the whole thing, but like what actually happened behind the scenes. It was riveting. I could not put this thing down. I wouldn't say I'm a huge true crime person, although I did like it when I was younger, so maybe I'm getting back to it. I don't know. But it was just, I could not put this book down. Mm-hmm. And it's just this, I'm not fascinated in a good way with this extreme wealth, but I feel like we're seeing it in the United States. You know, we see it everywhere. Yeah. Why are people drawn to that amount of power?
Well, just like even becoming an influencer.
Yeah.
Oh, I can get a really great income stream going if like I get all these people to follow me or, you know, doing reviews on Amazon. You get an extra chunk of how can I grow that? And just, wow.
It's sort of this unhealthy relationship with power and money and influence and not everybody's drawn to it.
Right.
But why?
Yeah, some people try to find a healthy balance with it, too.
Yeah, right, exactly.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
So, as you said, this is on a lot of people's radar. This one was a late Stephen Colbert book.
Okay.
I think this month.
And I'm pretty sure that the author is on, it's a podcast, This is Uncomfortable. It's a podcast on the radio, that's not right, but you know, it's out there in our hand about money, and I can't wait to listen to it as well.
He actually has a podcast of his own called Wind of Change, and he's really known for some of his other books, including Say Nothing, which is about the Troubles in Northern Ireland. I really want to read that, so I'll come back with that one soon. And then Empire of Pain, about the Sackler dynasty and opioid epidemic. So I had never actually read him, and I'm so glad I did now, but he just writes in that way where I flew through this book, and it's pretty thick. You know, I just kept going. So I encourage you to check it out. It's just fascinating.
So this is Maddie, and I have the next book. It's a picture book. It's amazing. Gosh.
Yay.
You know, you ever have one of those weeks where you're just like, stretched to the max. You're
this week.
So
that would be
tired.
This week.
You're thinking about things going on in your family and around the world and just things that just seem really heavy. Mm-hmm. This is Navigating Night by Julie Leung. It's illustrated by Angie King, who wrote the amazing Our Lake. That was a really great book, too. That was from last year. But this book is a picture book. It's the story of a little girl who is tasked with driving with her father in the evening to make deliveries. So it's you learn right away that it's not really in present day. It's in the 1990s. Because she has a map in the car that she's using to navigate, like where to tell her dad. And what they have a restaurant, and they make these late night, I shouldn't say late night, but evening deliveries where, you know, families are waiting for them, you know, people who live alone are waiting for them to bring them their carry out. And, you know, this little girl doesn't really want to do this. She's like, well, she's maybe like 9 or 10. I don't know. She's very annoyed, basically, with her father that she's been the one chosen in the family to have to help her dad figure out how to get to the next place. So this is obviously before maps and, you know, DoorDash and all that. They're kind of like the original DoorDash, I'll say. But the dad is just so kind and so gentle. And even when the little girl, like, has her little meltdowns, like, I just want to be a normal kid, you know, what she considers normal. And that would be, like, being in a family that doesn't have to do these odd kind of, you know, jobs at night. The dad begins to tell her, you know, how it is that he came to the United States. And he is from China, you know, during the Cultural Revolution, one of the many. he's been able to come over. And this act of, like, sharing a bit of his life story when he was younger and what it took to come here to make a better life for himself but also for his future children, it's just so moving and so touching. And the artwork, I mean, this could have been a graphic novel in my view as well, because the beginning was just in the release panels, and just Angie Kang just does such amazing, amazing artwork. Just, it was just very moving. And the thing that I think it just struck me was, like, when you're really stressed, when you're really annoyed, just that act of, like, connecting with someone and hearing something that sort of, like, diffuses that, you know, bit of angst or just being mad or whatever, it just really kind of takes you in a different direction. So it just was really meaningful to me. I really, really recommend it. And, yeah, that's all I got to say. Thank you.
Sounds beautiful. I remember going to a public library and using a little kiosk in the 90s, and it was MapQuest. So you could type in your coordinates, you know, your thing, and print it. I had to pay for the printing, and I took that, and I was like, wow. What even is this technology? It was like, so I would MapQuest everything.
I love that.
Until, like, you know, not really recently, but, like, after a while, I realized there were faster, better things, and now it's in cars.
Well, 18 years ago when I started here, I was using MapQuest to get around because I was new to Lansing. I'm like, well, we're just going to type it in. We're going to get your little paper.
MapQuest came through at that time.
Yeah. I once drove to Detroit on back roads, which is basically Grand River, using MapQuest along these little turns.
You went the long way.
Yeah, I did. Yeah,
the scenic route, rather.
Yeah, it took forever, but that MapQuest, it was so great. Right, because I didn't have the GPS, you know? Mm-hmm. Okay, this is a really quick one. On the note of pleasant books, Beatrix Potter's Gardening Life, The Plants and Places That Inspired the Classic Children's Tales by Marta McDowell. Marta McDowell writes several of these books. Emily Dickinson's Garden Life is the one I brought to the podcast a couple years ago. These books are impeccably researched, and they go through her story, biography, but also the garden plants and through the seasons. And Beatrix Potter had a really fascinating life, really kind of frustrating, you know, again, was sort of stuck by her role as a woman at the time, but made the best of it and did a lot for conservation in England, with the National Trust, that sort of thing. So just a lovely book. And just wanted to throw that out there. And I feel like this time of year, you know, the weather's always really dramatic, I feel like, March to May.
All
we think it's
place.
Not going to be, but it's like gray, gloomy. Yeah. But those trees leafing out, I mean, that's just...
It's beautiful.
It is.
Yes, it is.
It absolutely is. And so I feel like, wow, it's always that, you know, there's a lot going on. But touching back to what Madi said about looking for that, those soothing things and that beauty, just looking out and seeing those trees leaf out year after year, it's just a miracle.
Can I
talk
about a book?
Yes, absolutely.
Kind of touching on what you were saying about, like, picture books and adding a sense of, I don't know, peacefulness.
Yes.
In a world that's, you know, not peaceful majority of the time. I went to the library the other day with my daughter, as we often do, and I saw this book called We Go Slow. And have you seen it? It's so cute. I want to do the author's name justice. Can you help me? Mariah Odessa.
Mariah Odessa. Yeah, and I just got it off the screen.
Oh, no, here.
Mariah Odessa Akari Tally?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to go
that
with
looks
that.
Looks gorgeous.
Yes, yeah. Yes. The cover struck me. It just looks like watercolor paintings. And it's just about this grandfather and his grandchild. It looks like New York City, the setting. And it's basically highlighting how around you there's a lot of hustle and bustle, and they're just taking their time, and
that sounds lovely, actually.
Yeah, yes. They're eating their breakfast and they stop at a flower shop.
Aww.
And yeah, I was reading it with my kid. I'm like, this is so cute. It's much needed, and I love the pictures in it. you got to read you a good picture book sometimes to
absolutely
bring you back down.
Absolutely.
Sure. Yeah. I feel like we all need picture books so much more than we
yeah.
do.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I see a lot of interest in mindfulness in children's books.
Yes.
Yeah. But like even so many books offer a way to reflect children's picture books that don't even talk about mindfulness as a word, but just that way to like just stop and rest and
breathe.
Yeah. All right. I think we're done for the day. We made it through another podcast.
Yes.
And thank you, Mecca, for joining us.
You're welcome.
It was lovely.
Yes, it was
very
so
nice to see you
we
here
do
today.
Hope you'll come
thank
back.
So fun.
Thanks for having
yes.
me. This
and
was fun.
Thank
everybody.
You, Rissa, for recording for us.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Rissa.
Thanks, Rissa.
And everybody, happy reading.
Happy reading.
And happy Friday, at least today.
And happy Friday, yes.
Yay.